Chapter 18. Kamrach Na'uam. Every patrol led back to this central corridor, one that ran to a great gap in the floor of the upper complex, and more important, ended in a thick door that opened to a landing set just below the ceiling of a vast cavern at the deeper levels. In darkness and silence, Bungalow Thump was down at the end of that corridor, lying flat on the landing floor and peering over the rim into the deep gloom below. Quietly, young King Conorat crept up beside him and similarly gazed into the vast darkness. The two dwarves exchanged looks and a shrug, then Conorat motioned Bungalow back. They went a long way along the tunnel and down a side passage before they broke their silence.
"Get your horrible friends and put some light down there," Bungalow Thump asked.
"She's a fast one," Conorat said. "Got to be 100 ogre feet from here to the floor, if there's even a floor to be found."
He considered Bungalow's request for a bit, but couldn't agree.
"We drop a magic light down there, ensure that every drow in the lower levels will be ready for us. Shining bright in deep tunnels brings them all in for a what to do, and not sure I'm liking that with just this one way down. Ropes and slides and all we can put in are still to be leaving us hanging high and open if they're waiting for us."
"I figured as much, but I had to ask," said Bungalow Thump.
"Sure, and that your duty's to put it all out afore me, and for that ye got me gratitude,"
Conorat replied.
"Are we knowing where the stair's at?"
"Right below and folded over in half," Conorat replied. "That's what Athrogate telled me of the place, at least. The darn drow have done a great job in building themselves a stair that can be taken down fast, but not so fast to put back up, so I'm hearing. So no, me friend, we won't be slipping a few fellows down to the stair and getting it set up for us, if that's what you were thinking."
"All of us fast down on a slide rope, then," said Bungalow. "I'm not feeling good about putting me boys on ropes to rappel 100 feet and more to the dark floor, not with a horde of damned drow below shooting at us all the way."
"Silence and darkness, and 2 set of 3 ropes abreast," Conorat replied, "and know that I'll be right beside ye."
Bungalow Thump patted Conorat on the shoulder, never doubting for a heartbeat that his king wouldn't send him and his boys into a danger that Conorat wouldn't face right beside them. Conorat's family name was Braunanvil, but for all that he was Battlehammer through and through.
"We got them young Harpo wizards too," Conorat reminded.
"Wishing we had the old one," said Bungalow, "and the woman who's leading them. Both can throw a bit of lightning and fire, so I'm hearing.
The one girl with this group said her name's Keneally,"
Conorat replied.
"She's a flyer and a floater, and with more than a few tricks for such. Might be that she can give us wings, me and yourself, and so we'll chase our boys down the hole, eh?"
"Keneally Harple,"
Bungalow reminded him, emphasizing that legendary family name.
"So she'll likely turn us into bats, what?"
"Ha," said Conorat.
"Aye, her and the skinny fellow, Tuck the Duck."
"Tuckernuck,"
came the correction from the doorway, and the two dwarves turned to see the two in question, Keneally and Tuckernuck Harple.
"Rest assured, King Conorat, that we two and the others will be of great assistance in getting your 4 swiftly to the bottom, if that is your wish,"
Keneally Harple said.
"I've got a new spell to try for just this purpose," Tuckernuck added,
and the dwarves looked to each other doubtfully, having heard and seen much of the leftover effects of new spells tried at the Ivy Mansion in Longsaddle, including more than half the statues in the place. More than a few brilliant Harpo wizards had mastered a spell to turn himself or herself into such a statue, and of course did so knowing the words to reverse the spell, but without realizing that, as a statue, he or she wouldn't be able to mouth those words.
"Do tell, boy,"
Conorat gingerly prompted.
"Field of feather falling," Tuckernuck replied.
"You fall into it, you float out of it," Keneally replied.
The dwarves exchanged skeptical looks once more.
"We put it down near the floor, perhaps," said Tuckernuck. "A long and fast fall into the field, and a short float to the fight."
"Or quick surprise turned into a quick splat, eh?"
Bungalow Thump said dryly. Matron Mother Xerath sat on the altar stone in the chapel of Cusor Lauren, fidgeting nervously.
More than once, she imagined taking just a few steps and leaping from the ledge to the fiery maw of the fire primordial. It was just a passing thought and nothing she seriously considered. Not yet, at least. But she could well envision a day not too far off when such a suicidal leap into utter oblivion might prove to be her best course. She spun around on the altar stone then and leaned forward to peer into the pit, its sides swirling with water elementals rushing about in their cyclonic frenzy.
"Matron Mother,"
she heard from behind her, and she turned to see High Priestess Kiri and the wizard Hoshtar entering the chamber.
"I do not wish to disturb your communion, Matron Mother,"
Kiri said respectfully, and she bowed low. "What do you want?" Matron Mother Xerath snapped in reply. She turned a threatening glare over Hoshtar, who similarly bowed, and had the wisdom to remain low.
"They near the lower positions," Kiri explained. "I thought it important that you greet them personally."
Matron Mother Xerath winced.
"Already?"
she whispered under her breath, though she knew she shouldn't be surprised, for demons were tireless creatures.
"They are to be allowed nowhere near this room," she said to her daughter, "or the forge room."
"It will take one of your supreme station to deter them, Matron Mother,"
Kiri explained.
"Mighty Marilith herself leads the throng."
"A Marilith,"
Matron Mother Xerath said with a sigh. She was hoping that an Alfeshni, with its strange sense of law and order, would be at the head of the demonic column, or perhaps even some weaker type of major demon, one that she could easily dominate. The six-armed Marilyths, though, were exceedingly cunning and could warp any command to their advantage.
"Not a Marilith,"
Kiri said, interrupting Xerath's train of thought.
"Marilith herself."
"Under the suffrage and domination of Archmage Gromph Bayenri," Hoshtar added.
And Matron Mother Xerath felt as if he were twisting a knife in her back. By all reason, Gromph Bayenri should be a friend to the Zorlorans, a family so strong in male wizards. But whether it was his jealousy or his fear that one of the Zorlorans would usurp his high station, such an alliance had never come to pass. Xerath sighed again.
"Let us go," she said. "I wish to greet our reinforcements as far from this room as possible."
Deep in the mines, past the slave miners from Icewind Dale and those few remaining that had been taken from port last, the drow contingent met up with the lesser demons in front of the march from Menzo Berenzon. Matron Mother Xerath barred their way and ordered several back to gather Marilith. Demons continued to press, looking for a way past Matron Mother Xerath. It wasn't until she cast a spell of banishment, sending a large rock back to its abyssal home, that the others fell into order. At least as much order as chaotic demons could manage. Still, they all knew that they might soon wash their bodies in mortal blood, and the threat of banishment proved incentive enough to keep them at bay until at last the giant Marilith slithered up to face the matron of Cusor Lauren.
"I am here by the word of Archmage Gromph Bayenri,"
Marilith stated flatly.
"Sent to kill dwarves."
"There are thousands to kill, I am told,"
Matron Mother Xerath replied.
"Show me,"
Marilith said, and her voice sounded very much like a purr, while the fingers of her six hands eagerly tickled the hilts of her belted weapons.
"There are many tunnels,"
Xerath replied, and she turned and motioned up the sloping corridor. "The first right-hand passages lead to Cusor Lauren. The place is secure, do not doubt, and any demons you send down that way will be destroyed or banished at the very least by my defenses." Marilith let out a little growl, clearly wanting to go down those tunnels simply because of the overt threat.
"And where do the others lead, Matron Mother Xerath?"
"This way and that,"
the Matron Mother of Cusor Lauren replied.
"This most ancient dwarven complex is indeed a vast compound, much of it still unexplored by my family. Any time you are climbing nearer the surface, know that you are moving closer to the dwarves who have come to this place, for they have not gained the lower corridors."
"Then they shan't,"
Marilith decreed, her red eyes flaring, and now her six weapons slid free. Matron Mother Xerath wisely used that moment to begin her return to Cusor Lauren, her entourage hustling beside her, and with other dark elves ordered to collect the slaves.
who would surely have been devoured by the demonic procession, and retreat within the main compound area. By the time Matron Mother Xerath had returned to her altar room, Cusor Lauren had more sentries guarding the lower entrances than those in the areas where the dwarves might come down. The first good news of the day greeted Matron Mother Xerath in that altar room, for she found her nephews, the powerful masters of Sorcerer, Jaimus and Phyllis, waiting for her.
"Well met again, Matron Mother of Cusor Lauren," they said in unison, both bowing deeply and respectfully. "It has been too long since your beauty has graced our eyes, Matron Mother Xerath," Phyllis or Lauren added. "Menzo Berenzon is a lesser place without you," Jaimus added. "Enough of your insipid flattery," Matron Mother Xerath replied, though it was clear from her tone that she was indeed a bit flattered. Behind her, High Priestess Kiri caught that little fact too, it seemed, for she chortled, drawing an evil glance from her mother. "Have you spoken with any since your arrival?" Xerath asked. "Out in the forge room," Jaimus said, pointing past her. "Then you know that I have been off to greet a column of demonic reinforcements, one led by Marilith, who serves..." "The Archmage, yes," said Phyllis. "He brought her to Menzo Berenzon after her defeat at the Blades of Malagdor Larmgo, and so shamed House Barrison de Larmgo, or cast doubts upon the tale woven by their weapons master, at least. Matron Mother Bayenri chose Marilith to lead the column above even the Goristro that now serves her," Phyllis started to explain, but Xerath cut him short. "To further irk Matron Mother Mesbaris," she said with a shake of her head, one that wasn't full of the glee expected from one of her high station when learning of such diabolical intrigue, but rather one of disgust. The two wizards didn't miss it, and they glanced at each other, puzzled. "Help to organize the attack groups," Xerath bade her nephews. "Take Ashtar with you. When the demons engage the dwarves and wound them as I expect, we must be ready to finish the task, and so not allow Gromf and the Matron Mother all of the glory." The wizards nodded. "That would be wise," Jaimus agreed. "But first..." He let that hang ominously for a moment, until Phyllis added, "We have been to the great stair in the main lower hall, Matron Mother, and have witnessed the tunnels directly above it. You have more immediate problems." "You are sure it will work?" Keneally asked Tuggernuck. The other Harple nodded.
"It won't be large, perhaps a score of strides to a side, but all who fall through it will float gently to the ground. You know how long I have been preparing this."
Keneally couldn't miss the flash of anger in his tone, or defensiveness at least.
"It is well over 100 feet to the floor of the lower cavern," she reminded him, and indeed, Tuggernuck had flown beside her, invisibly, to scout the room, and so this was not new information to him. "Even a dwarf," she shook her head and let that unsettling thought hang in the air for a moment. "They'll be down from the landing to your feather fall field in under a 3 count, and will be falling fast."
Tuggernuck nodded.
"I know."
"How high will you put your magic field?"
"Twice my height, no more," he answered confidently.
"They will be falling fast."
"And floating the moment they touch the enchantment," Tuggernuck assured her. "If we put it up too high, the dwarves will be helplessly floating about in the air for too long."
Keneally brushed her long brown hair back from her face. She seemed as if she were about to say something, but cut it short before she made a sound. Tuggernuck smiled at her reassuringly, even reached out and patted her on the shoulder.
"It will work," he said quietly. "We'll get 500 battle dwarves in that cavern in short order, including the whole of the Gutbuster Brigade."
"I should anchor..."
"No,"
Tucker said to his powerful cousin, for indeed, Keneally Harple was considered among the greatest of their wizards, with mastery of some of the most powerful spells known at the Ivy Mansion.
"No. They will need you in other ways, of course. We'll find battle soon after the first dwarven boots are on the cavern floor, do not doubt."
The two heard the rumble of marching dwarves then, and so Keneally nodded and motioned for Tuggernuck to go and prepare the battlefield. The younger cousin pumped a clenched fist and ran off to find his trio of cohorts. After a short confirmation of the positions and plan, they began checking their components and rehearsing the words of the magical ritual.
The youngest of the group cast a spell of flying on herself, became invisible, and flew off for a quick scouting of the cavern to mark the spot. The others crouched on the platform, staring, looking for the signal. Tuckernuck flexed his fingers repeatedly to allay his nerves. Back from the group, through the door and in the hallway, Keneally stood with Conrad and Bungalow Thump at the head of the dwarven force.
"You are sure?" she asked the young king, and not for the first time.
"Will the damned spell work?"
Keneally glanced back at the four harples on the landing and nodded. "I do believe in Tuckernuck, yes, but there might be many enemies waiting for you."
"Then we're sure," Bungalow Thump answered for Conrad. "You just get us down there, girl, and get out of our way so we are not slipping in drow blood."
Out on the landing, Tuckernuck and his assistants cast spells of flying and fell from their perch, disappearing from sight.
"You tell your warriors not to run and leap," Keneally warned him. "Just walk off and fall straight down. We mark the spot carefully. Don't miss it."
"I will tell them," said Conrad. "Gutbusters," Bungalow Thump added. "Crazy as ye might be thinking 'em, none are fighting smarter."
Behind the two leaders, the next dwarves in line turned and passed down the reminder. Keneally led the way onto the platform, lay down, and peered over, awaiting the signal.
"Group of 10 at a time, boys,"
she heard Bungalow Thump whisper, and the first leap team moved into position.
"3 count and the next are off."
Conrad and Bungalow Thump were among that first group, and it occurred to Keneally that if Tuckernuck's spell didn't work, his failure would splatter a dwarf king and the leader of the famed Gutbusters all over the stone. She saw the signal then, a brief pulse of red light, and heard herself saying, "Go!" before she could even think about the grim possibilities. And so they did, fearlessly, 10 dwarves simply stepping off the landing and plummeting blindly into the darkness of a cavern whose floor was more than 100 feet below. Keneally held her breath as they disappeared from sight, hoping, praying that she didn't hear a crash. Already the second group hustled into position around her, and before she could be sure the first group had even reached the bottom, those 10 dwarves fell fearlessly away. From the moment he stepped off the ledge, Conrad Braunanvil feared that he was being foolish, his confidence inflated by the throne of the gods and his fine work in the entry cavern up above. And inflated by the whispers, the young dwarf had to admit. Many were talking about him as the first king of Gontalgrim, and the fact that he was being considered by some to be worthy of even being mentioned as a possibility for that title, along with Emerus Warcrown and Brunner Battlehammer, overwhelmed Conrad. Had his pride overplayed his hand? Those nagging doubts followed the dwarf down into the darkness, plummeting from on high. The cavern was not well lit, with only marginal illuminating fungi nearby, but he saw then the floor, hard stone, rushing toward him. He noted the harples too, though, the 4 standing as the corners of a square some 20 paces across, and even as he and several others started to yell out, he noted a shimmer in the marked-off field between them. Then, before that could even fully register in his thoughts, Conrad was floating, touching down gently a moment later with 9 Gutbusters beside him.
"Move out!"
Bungalow Thump ordered, and the group leaped away, 2 to each side of the square with 4, including Bungalow and Conrad, at the side nearest the circular stairwell. Barely had they made their positions and caught their collective breath when 10 more warrior dwarves came down behind them, breaking immediately as practiced to properly reinforce the perimeter. Out moved the dwarves with 10 more down, then another group, and another, and with 50 battle-hardened Gutbusters now beside him, Conrad couldn't suppress his grin. Another 10 landed. Huzzah for the Harples and the clever Tuckernuck.
"Brilliantly played," Jaima signaled to Phyllis in the silent hand-code of the drow.
"Or would be, had we not discovered their intent," Phyllis's fingers flashed back at him.
"Enough?" Jaimus asked, and Phyllis nodded.
Jaimus lifted his hands and clapped loudly. In response to the signal, stones scraped and doors slid open, and a host of enemies leaped out from concealment to charge at the dwarves. Slaves mostly, goblins, orcs, and kobolds by the score. More than 100 dwarves were down by that point,
with several times that number of monstrous foes flooding in to do battle. But these were battle ragers with fine arms and armor, and neither of the Zorlaran wizards held any notion that the slave force could overwhelm the dwarves. Then came the first bolts of lightning, crackling above the heads of dwarf and orc alike. The drow were not aiming at the dwarves, but at the four wizards they knew to be in the air above them, the four human mages that Hoshtar's spell had revealed. Faelis looked at his cousin and smiled and nodded, and the two began their spellcasting in unison. A few heartbeats later, a pair of small flaming orbs sailed across the darkness, arcing over the monstrous horde, and settling in the area where the leaping dwarves were touching down, right in the middle of the dwarven perimeter. Two fireballs stole the darkness. "Oh, no, no," Keneally Harple cried out when she saw the lightning, when she realized that the lightning was not aimed at those dwarves already on the ground. "Stop, stop," she cried at the dwarves on the landing, but these were battle ragers and they weren't about to listen with a fight so near and their kin being hard pressed by monsters and magic. 10 more came rushing through the door. Keneally leaped up to block them, screaming for them to halt. And at that moment they heard the crashes as the first group of unfortunate dwarves passed through the level of the flying harples, just 3 now, with the 4th having been driven off by a lightning stroke, and the now failed field of feather falling. The second group, the ones Keneally had futilely tried to stop, hit next, crashing and groaning, and still several of the newcomers to the platform leaped away. "Oh no, no," Keneally Harple lamented. She knew that she had to do something here, but had no idea at that moment what it might be. "Get your ropes," the dwarves around her cried down the line through the door, and more than one cast a disparaging glance Keneally's way. "Oh no, no," she whispered yet again, staring into the darkness, and with a resolute shake of her head, she leaped away. The sword of King Conorad felled the first orc to approach the perimeter, a swift and deadly strike right between the creature's ugly eyes. Not Conorad, nor any of the gutbusters around him, cried out with worry when the monstrous hordes appeared and charged in at them. Nay, they welcomed the fight, and when they noted the monsters as goblin kin, relished it all the more. The trio of goblins following that orc met the gauntleted fist of Bungalow Thump, a wild headbutt, one that would have made Thibaldorf Puent himself proud, by the same, and a twist, kick, trip, and stab movement by Conorad. All around them, gutbusters fought wildly, and goblins died horribly. And more dwarves descended, touching down and leaping wildly into the fray. Within heartbeats, though they were outnumbered, the dwarven perimeter widened. Then came the lightning bolts, and Bungalow Thump laughed at them and chided the enemy wizards for missing the mark. But a wounded cry from up above warned Conorad that such was not the case, that he and his boys weren't the targets. With the immediate threat in front of them writhing and dying on the ground, Conorad managed to step back and spin, determined to take command. Another group of dwarves touched down, several with armor smoking from the lightning bolts, but such a tingle as that would hardly slow a gutbuster. Still, Conorad hoped that it had been one of the dwarves on the ground who had cried out. A heartbeat later, when 10 good dwarves crashed down in freefall to the floor, the young king knew better. The field of magic had been eliminated. "No!" Conorad yelled out to a pair of dwarves who turned and rushed to their fallen comrades. The young king grimaced and looked away as the next 10 came crashing down, burying those 2 under them in a tangle of broken bones and spraying blood. Another dwarf hit the floor and several more behind him. "Form and fight!" Conorad shouted to his boys, for what else could he do? More than 100 were down on the cavern floor with no way to retreat and with no further reinforcements coming. At least, he hoped not. "Stop them!" Tuckernuck screamed, soaring back up even as Keneally came flying down from the landing. "We have to get them out of there," the woman shouted, moving in close. 2 of the other harples came soaring up beside them. "They hit Tolliver!" one exclaimed. "They broke the ritual," said the other. Keneally looked to Tuckernuck, who could only shake his head, his expression horrified. "Is Tolliver dead?" she started to ask, but the answer came not from one of the 3 flying about her, but from below, where a lightning bolt split the darkness, one originating in the air above the battle and not the recesses of the cavern.
Tolliver,
Tuckernuck said. Fetch him, said Keneally. We have to get the dwarves out of there. Fetch him and fly back up near the landing and prepare to set your feather fall once more.
Too high, Tuckernuck argued. The dwarves will float for a long while, easy targets.
Do it, Keneally yelled at him. And allow no more dwarves to come down, not on their ropes and not with your magic. Be quick!
She flew off then, diving down to the cavern floor. As she moved lower, she only confirmed her idea. Conrad and his gutbusters were being sorely pressed by monstrous hordes of goblinkin, and soon to be joined by demons or devils, or some other extraplanar menace, Keneally saw, noting a band of lumbering, four-armed, dog-faced beasts moving through the slave horde, tossing aside the goblinkin with abandon. The woman stopped and hovered, surveying the area, noting mostly the movements of the two harpals flying down to retrieve Tolliver.
Hurry, she whispered under her breath, and then, having no choice in the matter, Keneally began to cast a powerful spell. Another pea of flame arced in. Conrad and Bungalow Thump dropped to the floor and covered just in time before the fireball erupted, immolating several goblins they were battling and igniting a dwarf behind them.
Put him out! Bungalow Thump shouted to the others, but all nearby were too engaged in desperate battle to break off to the aid of their burning friend.
Go, Conrad told his friend, and he shoved Bungalow Thump along.
The dwarf sprang over the burning fellow, bearing him to the ground and rolling him about, smothering the flames. Behind them, Conrad met the incoming enemy, bracing himself to the charge of a pair of orcs. But those creatures never made it, caught suddenly by monstrous pincers to be so easily hoisted and flipped aside. In waded the gigantic Labrazu. Conrad got his shield up in front of a snapping pincer. He slashed across with his sword, but the Glabrezu's reach was too great, and the blade cut across short of its mark. In came the second pincer, and Conrad had to throw himself backward into the side, executing a perfect shoulder roll to come back to his feet just in time to spin and duck behind the shield as the pincer came in once more. A familiar voice sounded then, a magical call from above.
Get to the landing area now!
The dwarves didn't know what to make of it, and weren't sure the call was even aimed at them, or from where it had come. Conrad couldn't begin to react to the command anyway. The demon pressed him hard, pincers snapping all around him. He got his shield up to block one, but the powerful demon pressed in with the claw anyway, and Conrad winced as the shield cracked ominously under the great weight of the press. The demon held on and twisted, and the young dwarf king found himself easily yanked off balance and thought his life at its end as the second pincer came across for his midsection. A living missile intercepted it as Bungalow Thump flew into the Glabrezu, knocking aside the arm and driving the beast backward. It let go of Conrad's shield, and the overbalanced dwarf king tumbled back into the ground. Bungalow's cry of pain had Conrad back up immediately, though, and seeing Bungalow Thump hugged in close, the demon's maw chewing at the dwarf's neck, he fearlessly charged in. Conrad Braunanvil leaped high, both hands gripping his sword for a mighty two-hand chop aimed at the Glabrezu's neck. At the last moment, the demon stood taller, though, and so the cut came in low, driving just below the shoulder. Not a mortal blow, perhaps, but a vicious one, so much so that the Glabrezu's top left arm fell free, cleanly severed. The demon's howl echoed across the cavern, and many combatants, dwarf, goblin, demon, and even drow, paused to consider the sheer horror of that shriek. The Glabrezu threw Bungalow Thump at Conrad, the dwarves colliding and tumbling in a heap. But Conrad went up and hauled the bleeding Bungalow Thump up beside him. Before the gutbuster could argue or resist, Conrad shoved him hard and sent him stumbling back to the landing area.
You heard Keneally Harpal, Conrad called to all the dwarves. To the landing area, I say.
Easier said than done for Conrad, though. The wounded, outraged Glabrezu leaped in at him.
Go, go, he roared at Bungalow Thump, even as the demon began knocking him back. He knew the gutbuster wouldn't leave him. I am right behind. Form the defenses.
But Conrad Braunanvil wasn't right behind. The Glabrezu's pincer caught him by the shield again, and this time the compromised buckler folded under the tremendous pressure. Conrad grimaced and growled as the pincer came in hard across his forearm, pressing in through his fine mail.
He tried to bring his sword to bear, but the demon caught his arm and held him at bay. In came the biting maw, and Conrad timed his headbutt perfectly to intercept the toothy jaws with the crown of his helmet. The Glabrezu staggered, and Conrad wriggled free his sword arm and stabbed straight ahead. He felt his fine blade sink into demon flesh and felt the hot abyssal blood spurting out over his arm. Not far from the floor, Keneally Harple watched the dwarves scrambling, trying to get back to the landing area, which was easy to locate with nearly 30 broken dwarves lying in a tangled heap. The woman forced the gruesome image out of her thoughts and looked up, trying to see if Tuckernuck and the others were in position, and with their spell enacted once more. But to no avail, for they were in darkness too complete. But Keneally knew she couldn't wait. She began casting her spell, a powerful Dwyamer, known only to a few at the Ivy Mansion, aiming it right at the dwarves clustered about their fallen kin.
"No, you hold!" Tuckernuck shouted at the dwarves on the landing. He had figured out Keneally's desperate plan and knew what would soon be coming his way. "They're coming back, all of them, and you need to be ready to catch them and pull them to safety. Grapnels, I say! Ropes and grapnels!"
Many dwarves shouted questions back at the flying wizard, and many more shouted curses. Tuckernuck ignored them. He had to lead the ritual. Nothing else mattered. He understood the carnage that would ensue should he fail Keneally, should he fail the dwarves now. The other three Harples returned to him, and he motioned them into place. Clearly injured, Tolliver barely managed to get near to his spot diagonally across from the leading wizard, and Tuckernuck wasn't sure that one could bring forth his part of the ritual. The Dwyamer needed four participants. With no options available, Tuckernuck continued his casting, then reached his arms out left and right, forming his corner of the square. From his fingertips shot tiny filaments of light, streaming out to be caught by the casters at those corners, the two of them redirecting the energy to Tolliver. But Tolliver only had one arm up to receive the light. He remained lurched over to his left. There was nothing Tuckernuck could do. He couldn't even shout out for Tolliver, or he would ruin his own casting. But how he wanted to, and even more so when he heard the sudden commotion below him, and glanced down to see the tumbling, spinning charge of a score of dwarves flying up at him. No, falling up at him, he realized, for they were caught in Keneally's spell of inversion, where up was down and down was up. "Flip!" he did yell at the other wizards when the Dwyamer reached them, and they did, except for Tolliver, righting themselves upside down, which was now upright. The falling dwarves drew near, but the field of feather fall wasn't complete, and the ceiling, now the floor, loomed just above. "Tolliver!" Tuckernuck and the other two shouted, for now their spells were complete. And from the landing, which was not in the area of effect, the dwarves began to scream and curse. Dead dwarves tumbled upward beside living dwarves. Pursuing goblins were caught in the spell and went falling upward in the line. More dwarves came in, leaping, then flailing as they were caught in a free fall as surely as if they had leaped off a cliff. But many other dwarves weren't going to make it, Keneally realized. Nearly 150 of the sturdy folk had leaped down, the last three groups falling to their deaths almost to a dwarf. But the Harpo wizard realized that of the 60 who were already on the floor, less than half were going to find their way back. Yet another group of several gutbusters were pulled down by the goblin horde, overwhelmed by sheer numbers. Keneally spotted King Conrad of Mithril Hall, staggering away from a skewered demon, the beast spouting blood from its gut but still stubbornly pursuing. And more monsters, like great bipedal vultures, swept in from the sides, cutting off the young dwarf's retreat. Conrad fought valiantly, but Keneally shook her head in despair. She began casting a spell, a fireball, thinking to put it high enough to catch the heads of the tall monsters. She took hope when one of those vulture-like demons screeched and staggered back, its beak shattered by a mighty stroke of Conrad's sword. But the four-armed behemoth leaped in, pincers leading, and Keneally lost the spell in her throat. As the beast extracted Conrad from the commotion and lifted him up into the air, both pincers grasping tightly around the poor dwarf's midsection.
"Boggy dog!"
she heard Conrad cry, and he lashed out with his blade and managed to clip the huge beast's canine muzzle. With a yelp of protest and rage, the demon thrust its arms out wide, and Conrad Braunanvil,
the 12th king of Mithril Hall, was ripped in half at the waist. Keneally's fireball spell was lost in her throat then, and all she could do was fly up for the ceiling, her eyes wet with tears and gasping for breath she could not seem to find. She took some heart as she rose, though, to see her four kin maintaining their Dwyamer. Tolliver had straightened and completed the square just in time. Upward fell the dwarves, then upward they floated to land lightly on the ceiling. And dwarves on the landing threw them ropes, which fell up to them that they could be hauled to safety. And upward fell the pursuing monsters, too. Then upward they floated, and not one got to the ceiling before a dwarven crossbow launched a bolt into its torso. And the dwarves already up above were ready for them anyway, cutting the disoriented and confused goblinkin apart in short order.
"Hurry, pull them in," she heard Tuckernuck commanding. "Keneally's spell will not last much longer. We will lose any knot on the ledge."
Keneally nodded agreement and focused on the task at hand. She was more than halfway to the ceiling, the jumble of falling dwarves and monsters just in front of her. Now she concentrated on that tumbling mess, picking out monsters. A line of magic missiles shot out from her fingertips, striking a goblin, killing it, and taking out the one beside it as well. Keneally chanted the spell for a lightning bolt, and when she executed it, she perfectly angled it to blast several enemies, with not a dwarf singed. The power of the bolt jolted one large demon, too, sending it spinning out of the area of her reverse gravity, and as soon as the beast went out of the Dwyamer, it fell back the other way more than 50 feet to the floor. And so Keneally realized a new and deadly tactic, and one executed by a simple spell she could cast quickly and repeatedly. She picked out her targets with gusts of wind, blowing them out of the reverse gravity field, sending them falling back for the cavern floor, living bombs to drop upon the sprawling horde below. She would avenge Conrad, she determined, and she narrowed her eyes and sent a dozen goblins flying free of her enchanted area. Tuckernuck Harpa looked up, or rather down, nodding approvingly of Keneally's exploits.
But noting, too, that fewer and fewer dwarves were among the dozens falling upward, and that little fighting continued on the floor.
He glanced the other way to see most of the living dwarves already out of the enchanted area, scrambling on ropes with their crowded brethren grabbing at them and hauling them over the lip of the landing. He looked back the other way, back to the floor. He saw no dwarves, none living at least, but now more and more monsters were taking the leap. Tuckernuck could only hope that he wasn't killing more dwarves then, but he flew backward and dropped his arms, ending the ritual enchantment of the field of feather falling. He flipped back upright and waved his three fellow harples back as monster after monster tumbled past to crash against the ceiling, or soon to crash against the bodies of those that had already crashed against the ceiling. He looked down again to Keneally, and he gasped and cried out. A pair of ghastly creatures, like giant houseflies with human faces, flew upon her at either side, biting and tearing at her.
"Keneally!"
He began to dive, but a fireball below stopped him before he ever truly moved. Keneally's fireball dropped right upon herself. The flames cleared, and the Khazme demons, their wings burned away, tumbled for the floor, bearing poor Keneally with them. Again Tuckernuck began to dive, and again he stopped short, for Keneally's powerful Dwyamer ended then, and a host of monsters and dead dwarves fell from the ceiling, and those falling upward in the field paused, then went tumbling back the other way. So enthralled by the strange sight was Tuckernuck that he didn't notice a swarm of Khazme demons soaring up at him until it was too late. Covered in blood, much of it his own, Bungalow Thump was the last dwarf holding the landing, and the one who hauled Tolliver, the only harple to reach the landing, over the edge. The powerful dwarf sent the wounded man skidding back through the door. Then his eyes widened in horror to note the other two nearby wizards caught suddenly by the horrid insectoid demons. Bungalow fell back in shock, barely avoiding yet another of the darting Khazme. He would have been caught and surely killed, but a dwarf within the doorway grabbed him by the shoulder and hauled him back and to the ground, and the pursuing Khazme caught a swarm of crossbow bolts right in its hideous face. The door slammed shut, and Kamragna-Uam, the Battle of the Underway, came to an abrupt and disastrous end.